On today's call, John and I discuss a new water brand with clever marketing and positioning, John bankrolling a poker player and how all that works, our lazy fitness hacks, I almost just got actually hacked, plus all the clever scams we've encountered over the years, new tenants for our building and the economics behind those deals, the Airtable expert I hired, and finally, we mull over a, quote, Kickstarter for cities idea that we had years ago. All right, let's begin.
Hello.
All right, how's it going, John?
Pretty good, Marshall. How are you?
Pretty good. Where are you in Denver?
Yep, cool. In Denver. Just talking to you from my kitchen right now.
Nice. I'm in a tiny little phone booth at the WeWork that's next to my new apartment.
Cool.
Yeah. Hopefully, there's like a tiny, tiny little fan above me. Hopefully, it doesn't create too much background noise.
That's fine. I like it. It sort of adds some atmosphere. But like a real catch-up call.
Yeah. Dude, so something that just happened like 5 minutes before I called you. Brooke, our head of support, was like, hey, like FYI, there's like a Shopify email basically saying like our account's on hold. I was just like, what the heck? Like, what's wrong with our account? So she shows me a screenshot. I'm like, like forward me those. Definitely don't click any links. Long story short, I look at the actual emails right before I got in, and I just like hover over the link, you know, that like call to action to like log in your account. And it's like definitely not a Shopify URL. It's just some like random string. The from email is like, it's like do not reply at shopify.com. And like, I don't see anything else around it. But like, do not replies got a just slight misspelling. and then I'm like reading the message. I'm like, yeah, this is definitely written by someone whose language is not, or English is not their first language. It's like every word is capitalized in the sentence except for one. It's like almost right. It was like weird. So then I like copy the link, open it incognito, and like, yeah, sure enough, like it's just a perfectly styled Shopify login form.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting.
Avoided that.
So I guess the trap is people log in, then they get the username and password, and then they can actually log into Shopify and maybe update the bank information so that they get one of the payments or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
like I bet that works.
The interesting thing is it only has to work 1 out of 100 times.
Yeah.
And then you just email like, you know, 10,000 Shopify stores and you're laughing.
Yeah, we got 6 of them actually once we dug into it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is like if you hit a large enough store, like Shopify does daily payouts. So like you're getting someone's entire like payout for that day if they just miss it for one day.
Wow.
And I bet like if they get someone, they're probably going to get it for like a day or two. I bet someone larger too isn't like watching their bank account as closely as like a smaller person.
Right.
Ugh. Wow. Do you remember the other thing that like almost got us?
The CFO thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say almost. It was just like, okay, like this is interesting. This will get somebody. Do you remember? It was like someone posed as me emailing Brad. It's like, yo, like, need to make this wire quick, like need it by end of day, like basically using like social hierarchy and organizations. And then like, oh, that's the other thing is they prey on new hires.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're like, Brad, our CFO had just updated his LinkedIn like a week ago or something when he got that. And like, he had been with us, I think for like a month at that point. So we think they crawl like LinkedIn updates.
Yeah. That is honestly so smart. Like, I really respect the people who came up with it. Obviously, it's like the shadiest thing ever. It's totally illegal. But in a way, it's like, damn, that's pretty smart. Fair enough.
Yeah. I feel like most, quote unquote, hacking these days, like when we picture it, we think of like, you know, the movie hackers and like them hacking into like big databases and like, I'm in, okay. But like, I feel like all of it's just social engineering now.
Yeah.
Like these kind of things.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anyways. That could have been annoying, but yeah.
Yeah, dodged a bullet there. Nice one.
Yeah. So we've done a few of these calls and like we've talked about stuff and I realize I haven't followed up with you on like a few things. One, did you do anything with the Magic the Gathering card scheme you told me about?
I probably have about 100 of those cards now.
Wow. Of the same one.
Of the same card, yeah. But I realized that I don't think that's anywhere near enough to have any kind of effect on the market. Because the thing is I didn't pick a card that was necessarily like super rare or anything like that. I picked the card because it was like a funny pun. Because for the way I was going to, I may as well just tell you now because it's not. I'm probably not going to do it anymore. But the card is called, I think it's called Disfigure. It's like a spell, so you can like disfigure, you know, other players or characters. Or I just find because I don't even know how to play the game, but I thought it would be funny to disfigure the Disfigure card. Like, I just that was my logic, but it's a very common card, so. I think I'd have to buy like tens of thousands of them for it to actually like have any sort of effect. I still might do it just for comedy value because it's kind of funny. But yeah, I haven't done anything with it yet.
Nice. So funny. So I've been watching this show, Billions. Have you heard of it?
It sounds familiar. I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it.
It's actually really good. I'm really enjoying it, but... It's basically like this billionaire hedge fund manager, and it's like this cat and mouse story. It's the like whatever prosecutor in his region's like trying to like get him, and he's like the anti-hero in the show. He like plays dirty and you know gets insider information on these deals. Well, like just to spite this guy, the billionaire buys up all like some Winston Churchill like first edition books that he finds out that this lawyer, like public defender or whatever. Likes and he like had to sell a set to like make ends meet at some point, and just like to spite him, he just like buys all these books so he can never get the copies again. And there's only like you know 100 in existence or something. Which is, I don't know, whatever, for whatever reason, your Magic the Gathering thing reminded me of that scene.
Nice, nice, much smaller scale, but yeah, I like it.
Yeah, the geeks version of the billionaire spite thing. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. What about the personal trainer stuff? How's that going?
Oh, still doing that. Nice. Still so far so good. Still sticking to it.
Cool.
Yeah. I'll let you know if I ever cancel it.
Nice. I you probably already know this because I tweeted about it the other day. But my I got a new apartment. And there's a gym in it, so I've been running on the treadmill. And like, I mean, I've been running for years, and I would usually average like 2 to 3 miles. And the other day, I was like, I had read Atomic Habits. I think you had read that too. I think we talked about it.
Yeah.
And it just, for whatever reason, I mean, I read this like last year. I just thought of, there's a chapter where he talks about pairing like something you really don't like doing with something you do. And I was like, oh, like I'll download an episode of Billions. That's why I thought of it. And I'll just put it on my iPhone and, you know, prop it up and watch that while I run. Dude, I ran 7.something miles, and like the most I'd ever run in I looked it up in Runkeeper, and like all time was like 6, and I wow. That was like one time, and I usually wow. just average like 3.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so then that was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, and then like 3 days later I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go do this again. Had another actually I just had a bunch of YouTube videos downloaded this time, and I'm just like running. And I'm thinking like, oh, surely like it's just a fluke. I'm going to get really tired or like, you know, whatever. And I think I'm at like mile 5. I'm like, oh, huh. And I was like, okay, like I'll at least do 7. And then I get to like 6. I'm like, honestly, I told my wife the other day, I was like, the first time I did it, I was like, honestly, I think I could have done 10. Like I was just so distracted. Wow. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for 10. And I did like, as soon as I got to 10, I mean, I was super tired, just turned it off.
Yeah.
But I did 10. And like,
that's my, crazy.
Yeah. Like, either I just have all this like latent potential that I just haven't, you know, been able to achieve just because I don't know, I'm just too. Usually I just listen to a podcast. So I'm kind of thinking about the podcast, but also just thinking like, you know, I'm running. I'm just like, this sucks. But yeah, I think just the distraction honestly really helped. The other thing is I turned down the pace slightly. It was it was much slower than I would normally run at, but still,
10 miles. That's really interesting. Yeah, I've been trying to do something kind of similar. Like we have this Peloton bike, which is that that like exercise bike with you know, spin classes built into it, basically.
Yeah.
But the spin classes, I don't know. Like I like to try and do multiple things at once. And the spin class is like, yeah, you it's like you can like get sucked into it and like really like do a lot of, you know, expel a lot of energy. But I much prefer just like turning the volume completely down and just like putting on a YouTube video or something.
Yeah.
And actually I've been trying to, I got into chess recently. I don't know if we've talked about this, but I've basically been like, I call it activity stacking. So I'll be on the Peloton watching YouTube videos, playing chess on the iPad. So it's like this like fun little thing that's like actually fun. Like, I enjoy watching YouTube videos and I enjoy like playing chess. And as a side effect, I'm also kind of working out. So similar kind of concept.
Well, you do all three of these together?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like following the Peloton lesson at all. Like the audio is totally off.
Yeah.
So I'm really just watching YouTube video. And even now I'm just like listening to it. And then I'm just like kind of playing chess. But it's, I really like just zoning out, basically, like thinking of something else. And then as a side effect, like, oh, right. Yeah. I've actually been kind of working out for the past half an hour.
How do you play chess and watch a YouTube video though? Like, isn't chess super, like you have to just be watching the board constantly?
So I've been playing, like 15 minute time limit. So it's like, you get a lot of time to like think about each move. And I bought this sort of separate table that I put next to the Peloton bike, which I put the, you know, the iPad and my phone. I really like kind of went all out on this. And yeah, it's actually good because you can just like, you're just like riding, like thinking about your next move. Yeah, it's it works.
Funny. It's really funny. Do you win while you're doing all three of these things?
Sometimes. It's funny. Like I got like a chess teacher who I actually I stopped doing it last week just because I haven't had time recently, but for a few weeks I was having like just 1 hour of chess lessons every week. And the format for the lesson was basically the chess teacher would analyze my games and just sort of talk through the games that I've played on this website called LeChess. And every so often he'd analyze one of these games that I played when I was on the Peloton. And yeah, I would make some stupid moves for sure. But
that's,
it's the point is it's just fun. It's just, it makes working out less like a chore and more just like, oh, I enjoy playing chess. I enjoy watching YouTube videos.
Yeah, that's cool. So the chess teacher, so this is like a one-on-one meet in person, and he reviews games you've already played and like talks you through them.
Yeah, so he's actually an old internet friend, lives in Canada, and it's just like a Skype call.
Yeah.
So yeah, my chess profile is public, so he'll just like go through the games, like analyze all of the games, like pull out games where I've made, you know, either stupid mistakes or interesting moves, and then just talk through them. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. I've been tinkering around with Webflow. Are you familiar with that?
It sounds familiar. Remind me, what is it?
It's just like a visual website builder. But like it writes, like there's actual code I think you can modify. Like it's not like a Wix or like, I think tons of just, you know, big sites that you've heard of, like their marketing site is built on Webflow.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And like, I mean, you know me, I'm not technical, but I'll have an idea and I'm just like, I always have to just hire someone to do everything is usually like the best route. And I was just like, oh, I really want to learn this. So I've just been going through their, they call it their university. It just like walks you through everything.
Cool.
But yeah, like I've run into some things where I'm just like, I really wish I could just pay someone for like 15 minutes to just like ask my question, get it like, you know, answered and shown to me and then, you know, move on. I bet there's a service out there that does this, just like quick coaching. As far as, I mean, it's like actual HTML, CSS concepts that I'm like running into that I'm struggling with. But yeah, anyways, I don't know. It was on my list, cool. But yeah. Cool. looking at all my stuff that I was going to tell you about. Honestly, I have just so many random things. So this is going to be, I feel like we started off strong with great segues, and I'm just going to be like, okay, on to my next bullet point. Oh, dude, you know the whole luggage fiasco, getting our luggage stolen in Italy?
Yeah.
Got a $6,000, like, insurance claim from my credit card
to, like, damn, replace stuff. Nice.
Yeah. Like, it was a nightmare to get it, like, through and approved. But, yeah, Chase, I think it's Chase Sapphire Reserve, my personal credit card. They have, like, a lost luggage coverage. So because we booked the train tickets with that card, they covered it, and they cap it they cap it at $3,000 per person. So I mean, that's why it was six for Jamie and I, because I mean, I think the replacement value of everything was like probably almost double that. But yeah, better than nothing. I was definitely
that is
happy.
Awesome.
Yeah,
what was the process to make that claim?
So like what they asked and what they told us, it would be like changed like three times. Originally, it was like, okay, just itemize everything. If it tallies up to like over the amount, like we'll just take your word for it and then subtract like 25% of the value. Like I think they kind of knew it was probably going to hit the cap. So we did that and they're like, oh, no. Like we need receipts of the replacements. I'm like, okay. Mm. Like luckily, I mean, we had been just buying replacements. Man, I don't know. It went back and forth like three different times. Eventually, like, had to provide the credit card statements showing, like, we bought that stuff. I mean, and very, very detailed breakdown of, like, everything. Like, this is the underwear I bought. It was for Marshall. Mm. Like, this is the pair of shoes Jamie bought. Like, it's for this person. Like, here's where it matches up with the credit card statement. Like, it was a lot. I think this all happened like mid-March and we just got it like last week. So yeah, like 3 months of back and forth. Wow.
Still, man, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also dealing with another insurance thing now. So we bought a car when we came back to the States and has like 1,000 miles on it. Like have just bought a brand new SUV and we're at my parents' house visiting them on like a Sunday afternoon. And a huge storm like rolls through, fast winds. It like comes and goes within 20 minutes. I'm talking like clear skies back to clear skies. It's the weirdest thing. Well, the neighbor's roof shingles like all blow off and just scratch up our car like royally. Like every side, top, bottom, like probably about like a third of the car. Windows, panels, like all scratched up. So it's annoying. At first, we were thinking like their homeowner's insurance would cover it. But as it turns out, it's just like, I think, considered an act of God. So like we just had to use our car insurance, like pay the deductible.
That's funny.
But
sorry, that's not funny.
No, I mean, it's fine. I'm not too worried about it. It's just annoying. But what I thought was interesting is like we met with the guy 2 days ago. He like comes out like the insurance agent or whatever. I just thought he's going to like just check everything over. Just like, okay, yeah, this is all legit. And then we would take it to a shop. And then once there's a quote from the shop, they would like work with them and pay the shop directly. Well, he's like with the car for 30 minutes and then calls me back down, hands me a check and like a report. I'm like, wait, what? Long story short, like they roughly know what everything costs to like, you know, hourlies to, you know, paint and replacement costs for different panels. And I guess it's just more efficient for them to cut the check. And so I was like asking questions. I was like, well, okay, so if I take this to the shop and they find more, it's going to be more. Like, then do you guys get back in touch with, or do we get back in touch with you and you guys reassess and cut the difference? And he's like, yes. I was like, okay, so if we go to a shop and it just ends up being less, like, are we just ahead? And he's like, yep, no big deal.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. They must have just figured out that like it's more efficient for like that little bit that they're gonna be off every time than adding more like administrative work of like come out and then come out again.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
That's, That is interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Marshall, let me tell you about something that I have in my notes. It's this thing that I bought recently that I want to tell you about. I'm actually curious if you've heard about it. It's called Liquid Death. Have you heard about this?
I think I follow the founder on Twitter, so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to talk about it for a bit because I think it's really interesting.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, let me explain what it is. Yep. It's a drink called Liquid Death.
Sounds intense.
Yeah, it is. It does sound intense. It looks intense. I have one of the cans in my hand right now. It's looks like a beer can. It's like one of those tall boys. It's the tagline is "Murder your thirst." There's like a skull on it. Like it just looks like a beer can, basically.
Yeah.
The twist is though, it's just water. It's literally just water. Like nothing else. No sort of interesting spin. It's just water. And I found out about it because it got an immense amount of press when it launched because it's so absurd. And you know what the tech press and just the media in general are like especially when it comes to things like Silicon Valley. Like I've seen funny headlines talking about things like when Lyft was talking about doing these like big commuter lifts, the narrative was like, oh great, Silicon Valley's invented a bus kind of thing. it's the same kind of thing with this. It's all sorts of just like super, super negative headlines like Silicon Valley's invented a new type of drink called Liquid Death and it's worse than it sounds, or like there's an extreme canned water drink for straight edge punks. I wrote some of these headlines down. But yeah, it's very, very interesting. And I just think there's a lot of interesting stuff to unpack here. So first of all, obviously it's absurd, right? It's just water in a can called Liquid Death with a skull in the front. It's obviously absurd.
How much is it, roughly?
That's a good question. I bought 3 crates of it.
Yeah.
I forget how much I spent. I think it's maybe like between $1 and $2 per can.
Okay, so it's more expensive than buying like premium water. Like
probably.
What's that brand?
Fiji.
Yeah,
Fiji. Like
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously it's absurd, but the brand knows it's absurd and it's like very self-aware and it just totally embraces it. And it honestly feels like the whole thing is just sort of an inside joke. So, I mean, I bought it sort of ironically. Like, I bought it because it's so absurd.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's like a conversation piece. It's like the same reason why I buy art, you know, just to like, it just gives me something to talk about. It's like something interesting, some sort of story behind it, you know?
Yeah. And it's definitely like a branding thing. Like, I think it's really smart. Like, as much as I hate paying for like a bottle of water, you know, when I go to a restaurant, like I usually always buy water over, you know, a Coke now. I think they're going to do well also because this crowd, like the Silicon Valley, you know, probably their first customers. I think there's a lot of people going away from drinking.
Mm.
And I think it's like a good, you know, it looks like a beer, like at a,
totally,
you know, a cookout totally. Or whatever.
Totally. Yeah. My Allison's sister was staying with us last week and I would just like, you know, go to the fridge, just grab one like first thing in the morning. I think it raised a few eyebrows, you know. Like, what? You're just like going for a beer at like 9 a.m. But yeah, I think that just the entire brand was designed specifically to cause outrage and go viral on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it seems like I've seen a few things like this. There's this I don't even really know how to characterize them, like a video online news organization called Cheddar. And I think they stumbled onto the same kind of thing. Like for a while they were making these videos about products that were just objectively stupid. Like everything about the product was stupid. Like nobody would ever want it. Nobody would ever use it. The whole point was to cause outrage and go viral on Twitter. And honestly, it's a hard thing not to engage with. Like I retweeted a few of these things a few months ago just because they're so easy to like dunk on and they're just so easy to like
Yeah.
They just get crazy engagement.
Yeah.
And I think Liquid Death is exactly the same. And I just think it's interesting. Like, think about, like, if Meadwomp was going to launch like a water brand, Marshall, like there's sort of two directions you can take it, right? There's like, you can try and just do something kind of traditional and like out-brand everything else, like try and out-brand Fiji Water and it basically just do more of the same, which I think would just be so uninteresting and boring. That's basically what every water company does.
Right.
They just try and like make themselves sound more, you know, just more exclusive, better, like higher quality, but really it's just water. Or yeah, just do something absurd. Like this. The other thing that's really interesting, if you go on the website, they give you a free case of water if you sell them your soul.
So what does that entail?
I honestly think it just entails ticking a checkbox on a like form.
Like
when the checkbox says something like, yeah, okay, if you check this, we'll send you a free case of water, but just so you know, like, we'll own your soul.
Oh, that's so funny. Is this, are you on their email list at that point? Like, is that?
I think so. But they send you a free case of water.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
I didn't do that, for the record. I wanted to hang on to my soul.
Yeah, fair. Good job. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. They have the are you over 18 thing before you can enter their site. Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
I wonder if they're doing that to make you feel like it's a liquor company, like just to have the same idea, or just because they have like, I haven't watched their commercial yet. I don't want to mess up our audio, but they've got like a cartoon that looks, I wouldn't be surprised if it's super vulgar.
Yeah. There's a few, I've seen some social media posts of people shotgunning them. And it's just water. It's just water.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I looked up their investors, like, because I knew they raised money. I saw that. I don't know if you know Science Inc., the incubator out of, I think, LA. They incubated Dollar Shave Club. So they raised $1.6 million. Their investors are, at least the ones that I can see, are Science Inc., who led the round. Mm. The founder of Dollar Shave Club, he's an investor.
Mm.
Biz Stone, one of the co-founders of Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And then Jen Rubio, which is one of the founders of Away, like the luggage.
Oh.
Yeah. Interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? It's pure branding play.
Yeah.
Pure brand. It's just, and they're kind of getting away with it.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I don't know. I think it's so interesting.
Yeah. I think there's definitely opportunity to do stuff like this. Like, bring nothing new to the table as far as like a product, just like high quality something, but then take just like the complete reverse approach of what everyone else does.
Right. Just brand it in an absolutely absurd way, specifically to cause outrage in the media and on Twitter. And then everyone will just sort of buy it ironically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I looked up Fiji Water. If you buy directly from Fiji Water's website, a case of 24 bottles, they're like 16.9 ounces, which I bet is almost the same size as one of those cans. It's $29.50. So I think it's about $1.25 roughly per. So it seems comparable. Isn't the water from like, I don't know, some nice country or something?
Yeah, it's from the Austrian Alps.
Huh.
I'm just gonna open one right now.
Ooh, nice.
The interesting thing is I've definitely been drinking a lot more water too.
That's good. Yeah,
yeah.
You know what? LaCroix. I know everyone's been obsessed with LaCroix. Like I just drink it to replace the feeling of drinking like a Coke. Like I try to stop drinking Coke. More or less, like I may have one every once in a while, but just like it being in the same can, being carbonated, like that cold metal can, like there's something very satisfying about that. So I'll buy a case. I gotta check it out. I know.
Are you gonna sell your soul, or are you gonna actually pay for it?
No, I'm gonna pay for it. I want the whole
experience.
That's
so interesting, isn't it? That's so interesting because it's. I mean, I guess it really depends on how much you sort of buy into this kind of thing, but. I mean, I don't really believe that selling my soul would actually do anything, but also I'm very reluctant to do it. Like, it's just an interesting sort of psychological conundrum.
Yeah. I oftentimes, like, I feel like there's a different flow for, like I want to see the whole experience a customer has on, like, that route. Like, I don't know. I want to go through the whole checkout and just see the whole thing.
If you could go through the whole checkout, but right at the last step, there was this checkbox that said, you can either pay $25 or you can check this checkbox, get it for free, but will then own your soul. Would you check the checkbox?
You know, maybe liquid death is just like the Antichrist in can form. So yeah. No.
It's so weird, isn't it? I'm 100% with you. Like, I don't know why, but yeah, I would not check that checkbox.
So funny.
Just in case.
I'm on that page. I wonder if you get access to shirts, hats, and merch. Ooh. Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, it's an interesting company. I definitely need to get a case.
Yeah, highly recommended.
Nice. What was I going to tell you? I feel like it was something related to this. Oh, I was going to tell you my mother-in-law, Jamie's mom, Nellie, listens to our podcast. So,
oh, really?
We should a little shout out to Nellie Long. But yeah,
that's awesome.
Also, hello. we should be on our best behavior now. Is really what. Okay. Okay, so I've got some Ludwig stuff for you.
Oh, cool.
So we have three empty office spaces at the moment. One is the old Need Want office, which, in my opinion, I mean, I think arguably is the nicest space in the building, especially like with how we painted it and everything.
Yeah.
So there's a law firm that's probably going to take it. I have a call with them later today to like finalize some lease things. So they're going to sign a 5-year lease. I mean, if everything goes according to plan, like we're going back and forth on like red lines on an actual lease. So like this is, as long as like we don't scare them away or they want something weird, should go through. But yeah, 5 years.
Damn.
What was interesting is like when it rains, it pours. Like we've been trying to fill these three spaces. And then I think like 2 days apart between these lawyers reaching out, being interested, and then a startup in St. Louis wanted the same space.
Mm.
And so we were, you know, going to take the lawyers because they were offering more. And then it was, of course, like a long-term lease versus the startup just wanted, I think, a year or two. But Jamie, my wife, was like, well, why don't you try to get them to take the other two spaces? Like, maybe they would be interested. And I was like, yeah, why didn't I think about that? So we offered it to them, and I think they're going to take the two spaces. And
cool.
Basically, I guess there's a kitchen in both of them, and the kitchen wall we think is just a non-load-bearing wall, and they could just put a door or a hallway through there, which would connect the two, which would give cool. them almost the same amount of space as the other office. So we might, in one fell swoop, fill all three in like the same month. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah. Hope I don't jinx it, but yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
I think you'll find interesting. So I've been dabbling with a sort of new interesting type of investing that I want to tell you about.
Okay.
So bit of context first of all. So you know Kat, obviously. Yeah. So Kat is sort of like an old friend. She was, she's one of my most interesting friends, actually. She has such a fascinating career path. So she was basically an influencer, like a YouTuber, way before that was a thing. Basically, as soon as YouTube sort of launched, there was this like first wave of internet vloggers and people that would make videos. And she was sort of in that first wave. So she has, you know, like a few hundred thousand YouTube subscribers, like a few hundred thousand Instagram followers. She's just like an old school internet influencer, basically. So she lived in LA for a few years, sort of did the influencer thing. And then about a year ago, she decided to just go in a different direction. And she decided to become a professional poker player. Have I told you about this, Marshall?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so she moved to Vegas and became a professional poker player, which already I just think is the coolest thing ever.
Wow.
And so she's also doing some work at Stopwatch as well. She does like growth and community stuff at Stopwatch, but she's also a professional poker player. And she was telling me about sort of how that world works, like a little bit. And it's just like so, so interesting. So first of all, the most interesting part I found was a lot of these professional poker players in Vegas, they don't bankroll themselves. They have sort of like rich friends or investors or other poker players who are sort of more successful that pay for them to enter tournaments and that kind of thing. So she sort of has this like pool of sort of quote unquote investors that just bankroll her in different tournaments. And she was telling me about this and I was like, wow, like I'd love to just like, you know, throw you $100 or whatever and just sort of get in on this just to sort of like live vicariously through you and just like, just for the excitedness, you know, just to sort of feel like I'm kind of involved. So I gave her $100, which is, you know, very small part of her like tournament pool. And recently, a few weeks ago, it was the biggest poker tournament in the world. It's called World Series of Poker. You've probably seen it on weird cable TV at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like the biggest one in the world. It's in Vegas. I think it happens once a year. And she entered and she did very well. So she came, apparently there was 28,000 people, just over 28,000 people that entered. And she came 372nd.
Wow.
372.
Wow.
Out of 28,000 people. Yeah, because I bankrolled her for just like a very, very small amount. There'll be, I get a share on the upside. It's very interesting. I don't know if it's actually, I doubt that it's actually sort of like a very good way of investing money, like in terms of just the return. I think it's more just like just pure luck than anything else. But for the sake of $100, it's been very, very fun just following along her social media posts and yeah, just like kind of egging her on. It's been awesome.
Yeah. Wait, so do you know the return on that money?
So she won $5,100 for coming around 350th.
Okay.
But it's hard to know exactly because the bankroll was basically not just for one tournament. It's spread out over multiple tournaments. So until she sort of plays all of those tournaments, it's hard to really know what the return might be. But I think I'll probably make a small return, which I'll be extremely happy about.
Yeah. How does the deal structure of this kind of stuff work? Like, is it just like a basic agreement or is there like a website that facilitates all like your deal with Kat and all that? Like, how does that work?
So this is just like super sort of low key. I mean, hopefully it's fine that I'm saying this, but we just used like Square Cash. Formal agreement, just no sort of like contract or anything.
Friendly agreement. Okay.
Exactly. I don't even really know what the terms of it are. I'm just sort of like, sure. Like whatever. Just let me know. Yeah. So the other interesting thing is, I guess at a certain point in poker, once you reach a certain level, you're just kind of playing the numbers, you know, at a certain point. Like you basically just like, you know what you're going to play and you just sort of play the odds that are on the table and it almost becomes kind of formulaic. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but it's kind of hard to control after a certain point, I think, once you hit like a certain skill level. So what a lot of people do apparently is if you're sort of friends with lots of other sort of professional poker players, they'll swap a percent of their like winnings before they enter a tournament to kind of spread out the risk essentially. So, you know, you might be bankrolled for part of it. Then you might swap, say like 20% of the potential action or your winnings with
other people who you're also friends with who are also in the same tournament, just to kind of spread out the risk, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. Wow. How did she get into this?
That's a good question. I don't really know the whole story. I just think it was one of those things. She just really enjoyed it. Yeah. I think she sort of followed the sport. She's also really good at sort of making friends and just networking. So I think she probably, like, you know, became friends with a few people who were sort of in that world. And then, yeah, I just think she just did it. She just, like, yeah, why not? I'm just gonna move to Vegas and just do this.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Is she still doing the YouTube videos on a regular basis or just, like, kind of semi-regularly?
Yeah, still doing that.
Keeping it up.
Okay. I think she's doing some more, like, poker related content, which makes sense. But
yeah, I know she did the League of Legends conference. Like, I think that's when I met her formally, when we were, like, in LA visit. I can't forget all that. But yeah, she did, like, one of those, right? She was really into that for a bit.
Yeah, I forget the name of the conference, but it was, yeah, she put on this big League of Legends conference that ran for a few years.
Yeah. The economics, like, of a conference business are interesting. But, yeah, wow. I need to look her up and catch up on all the stuff she's been doing.
Wow. Yeah.
That's cool. I was going to tell you about the Airtable credit card thing that I think I probably told you about the first episode.
Yeah. Fill me in.
So, like, it's just been busy, so I haven't had as much time to, like, mess around with it, but I still really want this thing to exist. So I forget how I met this guy. I think a friend was telling me about just, like, I have a friend that owns a development agency called Built by Crit. And he was just telling me how, like, their leads, a lot of great leads are, like, his favorite client basically is someone who's, like, built out this really robust spreadsheet to do something, you know, pretty interesting. And then, like, they want to turn it into an app, like something way more elegant that doesn't live in a spreadsheet. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And he was telling me about this guy who's basically, like, helps people build out these kind of no code tools, like with Airtable, and, you know, builds out these, like, robust spreadsheets. And I was like, oh man, can you introduce me to him? So that led to another guy. Long story short, I hired this guy who makes a living as an Airtable expert, and he charges $150 an hour. And, like, he's definitely, you can tell he's technical. I think he knows how to program quite well. So I think he pegs himself as, like, an Airtable / automation expert. So he can do just, like, whatever you want with Zapier as well. I think those kind of tools, once you combine them, things get really interesting. So anyways, I was just, like, telling him about this tool I want to build for... I should probably back up and explain what it is again if someone's hasn't heard that episode, but... Basically, I want to build, like, a little tool that every time I go to book a flight with credit card points, I always feel like, okay, this is great. I just got a flight for free, but, like, I bet I could have gotten a better deal. Like, I'm left feeling like there's probably a better, like, transfer way of, like, redeeming points. Because I always have friends that get these, like, crazy first class deals for, like, 70,000 points, or, like, you know, fly to Australia for, like, 90,000 points in, like, the most ridiculous, you know, first class lounge seat. Anyways, I basically want to build a tool. It's like, okay, you start on Kayak or Google Flights. You're like, I want to go from here to there. And then you can see, okay, like, these four airlines go there. And then I want to be able to go into, like, my little Airtable or spreadsheet and just filter it by those airlines. And then also filter by the credit cards or points programs I have points with. And then it tell me, like, what if I can even transfer to any of those airlines, and then rank that by the approximate value ratio. Because, like, there are better and worse ways of redeeming points. Like, you know, Amex has a lot of different transfer partners. There's an agreed upon by the industry, like, oh, there's, you shouldn't transfer this one, but you should transfer that one. So kind of like as a guide of like, okay, you know, you can fly this airline via this card. Here's how. So anyways, I hired this guy for 2 hours and we basically sat down yesterday on a live Zoom call. He recorded it. He'll send me the recording as well if I want to like go back to it. And he basically built it out like in front of me and I got to like ask questions and, you know, he's like had some interesting logic that I never really thought of. But yeah, it was really, really interesting from, I mean, obviously I'm just trying to build out this thing to solve a problem for myself. But yeah, I thought it was just an interesting way of like, I could have just hired him to build this, but it was way more fun just like getting to watch him build it and asking questions along the way. So I don't know. It's still not done yet. I may try to see it to the end myself or maybe hire him for another 2 hours. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is interesting. So is the plan to still turn it into like a little iPhone app or something once you finish the Airtable side of things?
Potentially. Like first step is just like, okay, is this useful? Use it for myself?
Yeah.
Which, you know, hopefully with just this really rough proof of concept, I'll find value in. Yeah, I bought a couple of domains. I've got some ideas on like, it could be so much more than this.
Yeah.
Like I imagine you could do a really slick like Google Chrome plugin that lives that you put your information into. Like so mint.com, the way, if you remember Mint, like, you know, you connect all your banking institutions, it'll, you know, do quick budgets for you. And then the way they made money is just through like referral stuff. So like they would recommend based on your spending, you know, that X, Y, and Z credit card would be great for you. And they would make commissions off that kind of stuff and various offers. Well, I don't actually think those are the best offers, just like kind of roughly in your ballpark. And they make a great commission off of them. Like it'd be really awesome to look at someone's expenses and be like, okay, you spend a lot as a proportion of your income in the eating out category. These cards have the best like point multiples for that category. Oh, you spend a lot in online advertising. Like the Amex Gold card is great for you. So there's that side. There's like the points accumulation side. And then there's the redemption side, which is what I'm currently like tinkering with. And then I think there's just like the, you could build stuff around, I think you and I actually talked about a newsletter a long time ago that, would basically like, here's a package, you know, like here's a potential, like you could go here, you could book this Airbnb, you know, this cool location, Airbnbs are only $100. Oh, and to fly from your airport, it's actually pretty reasonable. Remember that? So I think, you know, and there's stuff like that in different forms, but if you did that then through the lens of the points programs you're a member of, or you have points at, of like, you know, a lot of times I don't really care. I mean, I care, but like, I'm not like, I have to go to this place. Just like, I want to go on a vacation. Yeah. So if something popped up, I know there's like sweet deals sometimes to like weird places that, you know, Delta's doing. Like I would love that. So I don't know. I think there's just like a whole toolkit that you could build around all this stuff, and whether you charge per tool or like a subscription fee to use everything or just build these all one off. I definitely think there's an opportunity there. So yeah, I've been thinking about this stuff and tinkering with it, and yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That really resonates, the idea that I don't really care where I'm going. Usually I just want to get a good deal and go somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I like the idea of being able to just sign up to some sort of newsletter or subscription or whatever, type in, you know, where I live, and it's basically just like an open-ended, yeah, if there's some sweet deal going anywhere from this airport at any point, let me know, because I'll probably be down. I think that's very, very compelling.
Yeah. I was also reminded of another idea that we talked about a long time ago. I think we actually talked about this on Hatching. I still think it's a good idea. It's just like a big idea. So remember, basically Kickstarter for cities. Do you remember this idea?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I do remember.
So like basically the idea is that And honestly, even now, like a few years later, I think it's even more basically with the rise of like remote work and companies being more open to it, there being more tools could, you know, again, okay. So basically the idea is tons of people making great money living in New York City and San Francisco, like they could keep that job. And they, if they so chose, it's some companies, as long as they allow for remote work, you know, they could move to St. Louis, for example, which has like just such a lower cost of living, great quality of life, like lots of cool things. And I just think part of it is like people just don't know that like there's something else available. And then the biggest hurdle is just like, yeah, that's great, but like all the cool people are here in San Francisco, you know, is like, I think the line of thinking a lot of times. Well, like if you just got like 100 people to all agree that are all like interesting and cool to pick up and, you know, move to St. Louis or what, it almost doesn't even matter. It just needs to be, you know, a lot of great cities that are quote unquote flyover country or like B tier cities, like are great places to live. So I don't know. I think you could make money through like the apartment complexes giving you a cut of bringing them like 100 people that are all going to move there, or realtors, or, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways to make money from it. But yeah, I was talking with someone yesterday and it came up.
Yeah, I find the economics of that idea interesting. You know, if you pick somewhere that's quite cheap, like let's take St. Louis as an example, and then you basically, like, everyone agrees not to buy anything until there's sort of like, what's the word? This is not the right word, but like terminal velocity, like
yeah, the tipping people point, to, right?
Yeah, there we go. Like, so everyone just sort of like doesn't do anything until there's a sort of critical mass of people to where it makes it like worth doing. Then everybody like buys something at the same time. Hopefully that they buy it quick enough so it doesn't actually like affect the local market of house prices, that kind of thing. And then I feel like just all those people moving at once would have to just bump the local real estate prices up pretty significantly, depending on how many people actually move.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then everybody who's doing this sort of gets this like instant bump in their home price. So it becomes like actually a, you know, smart sort of, you know,
yeah,
monetary thing to do as well.
Yeah. Like I could even see it as being a less of a big commitment to like as a sell to the individual people, and just doing it as like, here's an amazing apartment, you know, you don't have to buy, just like come live here for a year. It kind of reminds me of what Lambda School is doing. Are you familiar with them? In a very different way, but like there's basically this demand for tons of developers, and they are basically training people at no cost to them in the beginning to be competent developers, you know, where you can make 70 grand plus a year, and then they get a percentage of your income over a span of time. So like, you know, I think you can also pay up front, but I think a lot of people are taking the percentage of your income once you're trained up. And like they're filling like this massive hole and like changing people's lives. You know, I think there's a lot of stories of guys that were like warehouse workers making minimum wage, and then they're coming out of it making like 70 grand a year, and they just like don't know what to do with themselves. Like it's just such a drastic change in money. But
yeah,
I think it could really, it's to me, it's like a win-win on the city thing of like, there's just too many people, it's too expensive, and you've got all these great cities that just need some more people in them with, you know, with some money. And like San Francisco is not going to take a hit from this if you get, you know, even 1,000 people to move away.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. If I wanted to go do like some big idea company, that's probably something I would be interested in.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's a big idea. That's like a marketplace and a Kickstarter. It's just like, yeah, you have to pull so many different resources together.
I was talking to this guy recently who, I forget exactly what his job title is, but his job is to basically figure out how to reinvigorate dying cities. in middle America. So, you know, these cities that just like lost their soul, like, you know, people are just like hemorrhaging out of it. And he was, it was just interesting talking to him because, I mean, it's like, it's just an interesting problem, isn't it? Like, how do you solve that? But this is definitely something that could work.
Yeah. Like, and there's also, so I'm living in Dallas now and Toyota just moved here and they're like, Texas incentivizes so many of these big corporations to move here. I think through tax stuff or, you know, I mean, at a minimum, there's no income tax. Whereas like in St. Louis and Missouri, there was like a 6% income tax. So like my income just went up by moving here.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, at a large scale of like that worked, I think then you could get into, you know, negotiating with like local governments of like, you know, giving a tax abatement or, you know, that kind of stuff. Like St. Louis does with historical properties, like a 10-year tax
abatement. Almost reminds me of Groupon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get enough people to commit to buying something and then the company agrees to give you a discount.
Yeah.
I think you could frame it sort of like that to these local governments or whatever. And at a certain point, it would make sense, wouldn't it? It's like, look, if I can get 1,000 people to move here, would you agree to give all these incentives? And you can probably just run it through a spreadsheet and figure out if it makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting idea.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's just so many places where you could get a cut. Like I know why. I mean, want to tell you, I know I brought up the Ludwig tenant stuff, but the other thing I was going to tell you is that startup also wanted the same space. And we kind of had our pick of like, do we go with the one or the other? And the thing that I was weighing is the one was brought by our realtor and then one deal was like sourced directly. So while the startup was offering slightly less, we wouldn't have to pay like a 6% cut of the deal to the realtor. Where like, if you run the math, you know, it's something to consider. It's not just like, oh, what's the monthly rate of one versus the other. So the way those deals work is they get paid up front of the entire value of the lease. So like it's a 5-year deal at like so much per month. And there's some like increases over the years, but like you tally up what the entire 5-year deal is worth and they get 6% of that. So like up front, we're actually cash out to like pay the realtors. And then you get your return, you know, from the paying tenant over 5 years.
It's almost like a competitive advantage if you're looking for office space, not to use a realtor.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like from the company's perspective or from the person's perspective. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, it just reminded me of like, I mean, there's money changing hands and people get cuts. Like I'm sure if you brought a realtor 100 people, like at a minimum, they would, you know, give you a cut of the lease deal or the housing or, you know, a lot of different ways to slice it.
That kind of reminds me of this other thing I heard recently. I forget who said it or what I heard it on or where I read it or whatever, but you know, this idea that, you know, usually this like in politics, like if you vote independent or if like an independent candidate, usually it's kind of pointless. Like usually you're just sort of throwing your vote away.
Yeah.
But there's this organization or idea or something. And the idea is basically you sort of pool your votes essentially. So you sort of say like, okay, like I want to vote for this candidate, but I realize that it's pointless unless a certain amount of people also vote for it. So I don't exactly know how it works, but it's a similar kind of idea where only if this one pool gets enough votes for it to be significant, does anybody vote for it? Kind of just reminds me of the same sort of model, but just in a different context.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, there's something there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, cool, man. That's everything I had.
Yeah,
me too. This was a good one. This was like way more natural and flowing. And yeah, I love talking about these kind of ideas. This is the conversations I feel like we used to have in the office. We're like, oh man, I wish this was recorded. Like this was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. Anything new with Stopwatch you want to talk about, or just kind of
nothing significant? Just trying to trying to add more social stuff to make it more social. The big thing that's coming next is video replies, which will probably be happening probably sometime mid next week. But yeah, keep an eye out for that. Should be interesting. Also, if anyone wants to beta test, again, drop me a DM on Twitter and I'll send you an invite.
Yeah. Is the plan still like, there's a certain level of polish that you want to see before you just fully open it up?
Part polish, part just seeing how people are using it. Like, I think we'll know before launching if it has a good chance of working, just based on, you know, how the beta testers are using it, how engaged they are, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those two things.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, looking forward to it. I always check my little updates in test flight.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, good chatting.
Yep. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, cool. See you.
Bye.
Bye.